Hudson Valley Gives, May 17th.
It's Ramadan, and for over 14 centuries, this holy month has been observed by Muslims all over the world. I'm Kai Wright, and this week on Notes from America, we'll explore how the month is about more than fasting. It's about being generous with yourself and with others. And the traditions are constantly changing as people strive to make the holiday personal to their lives. So how have your traditions evolved? Join me and join the conversation. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The DeBruce in Livingston Manor, New York, an award-winning restaurant and internationally recognized hotel overlooking the Willowemic Valley. TheDeBruce.com. From The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you.
Hello, everyone. It's the last Saturday of the month on WJFF at 11:30. That means it's time for Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
Hi, everyone. On today's show, we're going to be talking with one of my favorite people, one of the funniest people I know, and one of the sweetest guys I know, stand-up comedian David Hodorowsky. Say hi to everybody, David.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Narrowsburg. Hello, New York. How are you guys? And Pennsylvania, for reaching that far, and maybe even New Jersey.
It's crazy. Our reach, my arms are tired. Our reach is so great. So David, just off the bat, why don't you tell everyone about your career as a stand-up, what you're up to these days, that kind of thing.
Well, my career as a stand-up, I don't know. I've been performing for years now, since 2003. I love stand-up. It's a great medium. I've been performing regularly at the Duplex, and I even host a show every Tuesday. It's the longest running open mic night in New York City, by the way.
That too. In itself is an accomplishment. What's the name of the open mic show?
It's called Suddenly Stand Up. It was started in 1997 by Poppy Kramer, and it continues to this day by yours truly.
And is there a criteria for the open mic?
You've got to buy two drinks and then you get to go up. It's really great. Everybody gets 5 minutes, and if you're not funny, you get four.
You know, I think that's so important because it indoctrinates new stand-ups to the culture of drinking while you perform.
Oh, absolutely. You can get soda water though too. You can do whatever you want, for real. Have two bottles of water. Go right ahead.
Well, the Duplex does support diversity. So let's go back into the way back machine, David. You said you've been performing stand-up since 2003, which coincidentally is the year I met you.
Oh, my God. I was just a baby. Look at that. And here we are today, my grandpa and me. Nice to see you.
You were a baby. Had you just graduated from Rutgers when you started?
I had graduated, oh, my God, 2001. And then I thought, hey, wouldn't this be fun to try stand-up? So I took this really wonderful class with Ron Poole, and that's how I think I was introduced to you back
then. Yes, we met through the pool party at Don't Tell Mamas.
Oh, my God. Oh, those are the days.
So let's assume that there are some aspirational stand-ups listening to us. What motivated you to be curious about stand-up or think it was something you might like to pursue?
I would definitely say that I've always had humor in my blood. I've always looked at the brighter side of life, even and pessimistic too, whatever. It doesn't even matter. I just feel like humor is the best way of expressing yourself. And I found a lot of joy through that as well. And met tons of friends through this whole comedy world. But my advice would be to just go out and do it. Write something down. Find something that you have an opinion about and go full throttle with it.
And how would you describe your stand-up now?
I do a lot of crowd work. That's what I do now. I every single week, that's what the best thing about hosting an open mic night is you're able to deal with comics who are coming in with brand new material every single time. Like this is more of a comedy gym than anything. But when you're up there, you want to sell it. Everybody wants to have a good show. I would have to say that it's the best mic night in all of New York because all the comics are very supportive and there's even a small audience that comes along as well. But it's so much fun. And it's just nice to have, it's a little playground for people to work out new material and see how it works there. But people are very open.
At an open mic, that makes sense.
There you go.
Now, away from the crowd work, how would you describe your point of view when you're writing or crafting a joke? What are your goals or what is the persona that you are playing with?
I like stupid. I like dumb. I've always found that, you know, you've got to be very smart to do stand-up to begin with. But when you can connect something in a different way that nobody was expecting, but it is connected in a way, that it's funny for me. I always laugh. Oh, like, that's dumb. I love that. Like, for instance, everybody says 9/11 was an inside job, but I saw the planes fly in from the outside.
I paused for laughs so the people listening in their cars could enjoy that. So through the repetition and through the lessons of stand-up, one of the things that I always tell people when I teach a class or I'm talking in front of an audience in a talkback session, when I'm touring with my show Broadway's Next Hit Musical, is the more fun you're having, the more fun the audience is going to have. And the more engaged you are in the swirl of ideas, the more you're going to bring the audience along with you. Do you agree with that? Is that part of your approach?
I totally agree. I think if you find something funny, most people will find it funny. And I guess it depends on your own humor level as too. Because, like, I don't know, my dad thinks that things are funny, but he's not really funny. So it's tough to gauge it for that personality. I would say that, yeah. But most of the time, if you find something humorous and funny, it depends on your personality. But if you're on pretty much everybody else's level, if you think it's funny, it's funny. And go with that. Live with that. Give it to the world. People want to see that.
Well, and one of the things that I would say about you, David, were the audience able to see or hear your stand-up act, is on stage and off stage, you are exceptionally joyful. You are one of the most joyful people I know. So is that something you are conscious of? Is that something you mine? Or is that just you taking advantage of how you look at life?
I guess, yeah, you have to, everybody has a different way of doing their set, of doing stand-up. But yes, I would say that I definitely rely on my joy and stupidity and laugh and fun. And I use that in my own way. But I know so many deadpan humor, like, comics out there who just straight face will just tell you the line. And, like, the whole audience will die laughing. They're having the best time ever. But I'm not a deadpan humorist. I can't do that. I could, but it's just not my MO.
Don't you think that more than the specifics of the personality, it's the authenticity of the comedian and their point of view? For example, I could not do, I'm not Paula Poundstone. I am not Sam Kinison. So it has to filter through your point of view in an organic way to really connect. At least that's my thinking.
I'm really relating to these 80s comics, by the way. Thank you for being relevant for today's audience. Mm-hmm. Paula Poundstone, Sam Kinison.
I was just trying to think of household names. Chris Rock. I just watched Chris Rock's special. What did you think? Did you watch that?
No, I haven't seen the special yet. I would love to. I want the slap heard around the world. We need to have a reaction. And we've got it with a whole Netflix special. Good for Chris Rock.
And he made us wait for a year. Made us wait for it.
Made us wait. I know. You had to dovetail on this Oscar buzz.
But you know, enough promo for Chris Rock. He doesn't need us. Let's get back to our discussion. So you've been doing stand-up for, this is your 20th anniversary. What?
Oh my God. Really?
20 years of Hodorowsky. I've seen the signs in Times Square. But within that, what is something that you were at the beginning of it that now has changed. You were in your 20s, now you're in your 40s. You were single, now you're a partner, those type of things.
I would say that I definitely, when I was a lot younger, I would write my humor was just a little more, it wasn't, you know, we've changed a lot, but it wasn't as nice to people as it is now. Like now I'm a lot more conscious of am I offending somebody with this line or just subjects, I guess. So I kind of veer away from things that are going to be super controversial or anything that's going to be completely off the rails. So I just kind of just stick with human interaction. Things that are in the news, people just challenging people's perceptions of what's going on currently.
So let's talk about that process, because earlier in the interview, you did a joke that referenced September 11th. So what is the process of giving yourself permission to use that as a subject and then finding the laugh within it?
Isn't it time plus tragedy equals comedy? What is that?
I think it's tragedy plus time.
There we go. Tragedy plus time equals comedy. So I think that's okay. That's why we can make fun of JFK now. That's why people talk about things that have happened in the past. I don't know if you can really be talking about things currently. Like, nobody wants to hear jokes about school shootings unless they're really like on the nose and right. But that's what Nancy Witter always says. The secret of comedy, timing.
I recently got yelled at by an audience member in Chicago saying that he didn't care for my politics. And I said to him, I didn't say anything about politics. And he said, yes, you did. And I said, no, I'm very deliberate about that, sir. I made jokes about the tension in the country, and that is not political. I'm very careful not to disrespect my audience for feeling differently than I do. But the tension of the country is something I think we can all agree on. So you may have decided how I feel about something, and you may be right, but the joke was not political. And he thought about it for a second. I'm glad we had that discussion. And he said, I see what you're saying. I suppose you're right. And then I said to him, because I couldn't let it go, but by all means, sir, if you spend 30 years developing a skill, I'll come and listen to you with an open mind. And he didn't care for that last part of the conversation. But how do you deal with the tensions in the country right now? You do a lot of crowd work. How do you bother riding that fine line?
I think that you've got to deal with it head on for the moment, because most of the audience members, they're not there to have some political discussion. They're not there to be angry. They're there to be entertained and to be just taken away from their whole life situation at that moment. Like, you're not getting a babysitter and coming into the city to be yelled at or to feel upset. No, you want to have a good time. So you have to deal with it head on, put it in its place, and then move on to the next subject. And then hopefully it gets swept under the rug and see you later. But I don't know, if somebody is in the audience getting that upset, they've got to realize that it's a comedy show. And there are more important things in the world. And let's just have a good time and see you later. Like, either leave or get on board.
Well, and I think someone like that very often comes to a show wanting to be upset. And I often tell people when I'm teaching workshops, if someone was an ass before they came to deal with you for 15 minutes, they're probably going to be an ass afterward. You can't personalize it, because you're not going to fundamentally change someone in a short amount of time.
That is the God honest truth right there.
And speaking of a short amount of time, David and I will be right back.
Travels with tricks. Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank for over 100 years. Meeting banking needs with a variety of deposit and loan products. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. From Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. livingstonmanorny.com. And from listeners like you.
Hard times are always with us, for so many people. So again, next time on The Wagalone of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll be hearing uplifting music about the downtrodden, reminding ourselves of those less fortunate. Please join me, Graham Rice, for music about hard times on The Wagalone of Monkeys here on Radio Catskill on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Travels with tricks. Hey, everybody. We are back talking with stand-up comedian and good friend David Hodorowsky on Travels with Triggs. So, David, let's just talk about comedy as a concept. Why do you think people come to theaters, want to laugh? What do you think is the motivation behind comedy first for the audience?
I think it's number one to have a good time. It's something to do, but people show up at a show because they want to laugh. They want to get those endorphins out. They want to laugh with other people around them too. They want to have the whole audience around. They want to have that whole experience, and they want to show up later, or they want to leave the show and know that they had a good time. I'm glad we got a couple of drinks. We got to laugh. And we learned a lot. And then you can repeat the jokes to your significant other over and over and over again, just like my aunt and uncle do.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting about that, right, is that's the essence of the live experience. If you're watching it on a screen, you're not getting the catharsis or learning from what makes other people laugh, because in my opinion, those are the best laughs in the world, when one pocket gets it, but the response is such that other people start to ponder why that person's laughing, and you can feel the laugh grow.
Oh, absolutely. Being in an audience, there's nothing like it. Live entertainment, no matter what it is so fulfilling. And I think that's part of being a performer. Like, I've always been drawn to it. I want to be part of all these other people's live experiences, but it's fun to be the center of attention too, and get all those thoughts out, get that set off your chest and make some people laugh. And hopefully they'll go back and be like, well, my life is better because I did that tonight.
So let's go back to 2001 when you graduated from Rutgers. What was the vision for your professional life? What did you think you were going to be? What were you going to try to be?
I always thought I'd be a temp at any company. That's just all I wanted it to. No, I always thought that I wanted to write or produce or be an actor on television or anywhere. But, you know, life throws you punches. You still got to make money. You got to do different things. I waited tables for many years. I've worked at different companies. Like, you just have to, you need to have a day job. You need to figure that out too. Cause like, comedy isn't paying all my bills, unfortunately, but it is filling me up with free drinks. I'll tell you that much.
And just think about that. That's your retirement money right there.
Oh yeah.
Those free drinks. I think you have fulfilled some of those things. You've been a writer, you've been a producer, you've done that.
I have, on smaller scales. I would like to step it up and to be doing a lot more than I have been doing. However, I don't know, I gotta get motivated. Get more.
Well, then you have other parts of your life. You're very involved with your family. You've got a relationship you're concentrating on. There are lots of things. But the next thing I want to talk about is, let's fast forward to 2003 and the kid who had all of those dreams deciding to explore stand-up. What do you think the need you were fulfilling was? For example, when I started studying improvisation, I think I had a lot of unresolved feelings that I needed to find a positive outlet for, which was laughter.
Yeah, for me, I believe too, it was finding joy and finding laughter. And it was also just pursuing my drive for For comedy, I like New York is a great comic town. It always has been. It always will be. I was influenced heavily as a kid by like MTV's stand up half hour. They used to have the show on, and then I love Steve Martin and Carol Burnett and Saturday Night Live. Like these were all my favorite shows, and I would watch them. And anything Mel Brooks, like our mom let us watch Blazing Saddles when we were kids, and she's like, just don't repeat anything that happens in this movie.
And let's talk about your mom, because she was a powerful, obviously a powerful force in your life, but also someone that I think since she's passed away, you've really consciously kept her alive and an active part of your life. So my question is, a parent is listening to this show, what are some of the things that your mother did that allowed you to honestly go for expressing yourself and pursuing your passions?
Well, my mom definitely, she supported me when I was in high school to be in anything theater related. I was in the improv group. I grew up in Wisconsin, so we had this speech competition called Forensics. It's not the science. It's called Forensics. It's also a speech competition. So I was heavily involved with that. I don't know if you realize this, but you're talking to a state champion. I did a solo acting humorous, and I was number one in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, David, that's all fine and well. I was the number one state champion for extemp speaking.
Were you?
We were assigned subjects, and we had to make up our speech, which some would say was probably more difficult. But anyway, getting back to I was also a forensics judge.
See, I was too. I was a coach too for many years.
Yeah, some weeks I wouldn't have eaten without that speech contest.
Ah!
So anyway, get back to what your mother did that set you on the path that has brought you so much joy.
My mom, she always had such a good sense of humor. And she had a lot of tragedy in her life. And she would always deal with it with humor. She would always look at the bright side and she would make jokes about it. And I always thought that coping mechanism was very positive and something that I definitely use to this day. I would say that all my siblings do too. Like we went through some really dark places, and all of us, there's four of us, we've all dealt with the world and are able to deal with it with humor. And we're all in a good place now. Like we could have all fallen into it, like depths of despair and woe is me. But none of us really did that. Our mom really set us up for success in, first off, like having counseling. I think that always helps, talking it through. But then humor. Humor is one of the best medicines in the world.
Well, I would say, having met all of the Hodorowsky offspring, that you're right. Despite those dark times, you're also exceptionally forgiving people.
Yeah. But I think that's all from my mom as well. She taught us that, even though like the whole Catholic faith, they kind of dismissed her for getting a divorce and blaming it on us. But like, hey, like mom, you're really the one who's using the message of Christianity the most, of using forgiveness. And I feel like forgiveness, even though I'm not a big practicing Catholic at all, forgiveness is one of the most important concepts that you can realize in your life, because it makes life less difficult and you can move on and you're not dwelling on terrible things that have happened to you. I know so many people that are so angry for so many other reasons. And like, why are you still dwelling on this? Why don't you just forgive that person? And it's out of your mind now. Let's move on.
You know, what you just said reminds me of something, ironically, that I cannot forgive. And that is the concept that comedy is always motivated by anger. Ironically, that makes me angry, because I don't think comedy is always motivated. I think it's too simple. and that comedy is not always motivated by negative intention. It makes me sad when people think that.
Oh, I don't think that comedy's negative. Like when you think I Love Lucy was negative, like.
No, but you know what I mean, that people say comedians are angry people.
Oh, well, some comedians, they may come off as angry, but when you talk to them one-on-one, I don't think they're that angry. But they're comedians are coming with a point of view, and they are expressing that, and you can take anger away from it, sure, but I would say the number one motivating factor for them is getting this point across and that truth. And they're also challenging you. And that's my favorite thing about humor. Humor can change the world. Like when we're looking at this awful, like white supremacists and stuff in Germany, especially, what they've done is like you combat all that with humor. And it kind of belittles that terrible point of view to a point where you're laughing at them because of their stupidity. And I think we need more of that in the world.
I feel badly that we seem to have lost. The world has become such a literal place that I feel that satire is harder for people to understand the point of view of because they take it at face value.
That's very true. Yes. We need Lysistrata back. Anybody?
Well,
I
know my audience loves a good Greek theater joke. So thank you, David. As we wrap up, tell us about what for you as the comedian, what goes into a perfect moment on stage?
I would say a perfect moment on stage is when you are able to bring the entire audience onto your side. I personally like to have a moment, like a perfect moment for me would be something that all of a sudden everybody's laughing, then all of a sudden it gets very serious and you maybe even have a tear from somebody, and then you bring it all back again and it's laughter and uproarious and hilarious and fun. But to humanize it, to have a moment where something touches your heart, that makes it a perfect moment for me.
Well, David, I have no doubt that our conversation has touched many a heart this morning. Wow. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, thank you to the audience. Donna Fellenberg will be back next Saturday at 11:30 with Catskill Character. Until then, thank you for tuning in and listening to David Hodorowski on Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
You can't travel the world in the blink of an eye, but NPR gets you pretty close by bringing you the latest stories from everywhere. Support the station that takes you there.
Support the news, information, and entertainment your friends and neighbors rely on. Make your contribution now at WJFFradio.org.
Support comes from the Homestead School, Montessori education, preschool through early college with campuses in Glens Bay and Hurleyville. Building the intelligence, creativity, connection, and skills for an ecological future since 1978. Homesteadschool.com. From The River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York, riverreporter.com, and from listener donations at wjffradio.org.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Alzo Slade told us all to calm down about TikTok espionage.
But this is the thing, like, if China is using TikTok to spy on us, then that should just let them know that they ain't got nothing to worry about.
I'm Peter Sagal. We'll be doing our own TikTok, except it's much longer and it's only audio, with special guest David Axelrod. Join us for this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations, from Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH.